Welcome back to the Mining Pod. We got another news roundup. A lot of things happened in Bitcoin mining this week, so we got great coverage here. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch.
Is your mining operation happening ready? Take control of your own future with the right energy strategy. Linkcoin Energy Trading Platform is a tool used by miners to design, monitor, and seamlessly orchestrate sophisticated energy strategies within electricity markets such as ERCOT, New York, and PJM. Avoid penalties, participate in demand response programs, and capture hundreds of thousands of dollars per megawatt per year by deploying the right block and index strategy. Secure your competitive edge at linkcoin.com.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Welcome back to the Mining Pod. Matt is here. Welcome back, Matt. It's been like a month since you've been on the podcast.
Thanks, Will.
And Charlie.
Happy to be here.
We're happy you're back as well. Okay, we got a lot of topics to dive into, so we will jump right into it. We're going to be talking a lot about Ocean Protocol, which launched this week. That was not only a cool launch, we had Bob Burnett talking about that live at the event earlier this week, so go check that out if you did not. But there's been like a lot of follow-up conversation afterwards because of Twitter tribes going back and forth on censorship. And then we will move over and talk about AntPool, which refunded an 83 Bitcoin transaction fee to the recipient earlier this week. A lot of discussion around that. And then AntPool also overtook Foundry. So we'll dive into these topics. Let's first off toss it over to Charlie. Charlie, give us what you think happened with this Ocean's Pool launch.
Well, it's really cool to see a Strata V2 pool with some serious firepower behind it launch. Strata V2 has been a bit of a white whale in the mining space for a while. Taglines being improved decentralization, a better way to pass block template back and forth. You know, the current Strata V1 is now very, very old. It's like, what, 10 years
old? Wait, just a second. I'm getting a...
This on is my weird. End?
No, I'm getting a phone call.
From? Oh!
Ben.
No
Ben,
way.
This is weird. This has never happened before.
Ben?
Ben Gagnon.
Oh, natural call-in. Nice.
Yeah, from...
Bitfarms Ben?
Yeah, Ben from Bit...
Oh, ben man, Bitfarms. I guess Bitfarms the join ben. Link was public. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ben, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Is this working? Does what? This call-in number work?
This is so odd. Okay. Well, did we share the link with you? Or like, welcome to the show, I guess?
No, I just was trying to, you know, Google for this number. I found a number on a Telegram chat. I just clicked it. I dialed in, and here I am. I mean, long time listener, first time caller, but I'm glad I finally made it through.
Well, I guess welcome to the show, and it's good timing because you guys just like bought a lot of S21s or something like that. So I guess we should talk about that if you're here.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that.
Okay, dig in.
We just bought,
you guys just aped the top.
I aped the bottom.
Yeah, you aped the bottom. To tell us about that.
Yeah, we just bought our largest purchase of Bitcoin miners ever. We bought up to 64,000 Bitmain T21s. And, you know, hopefully we caught the bottom. We've been waiting patiently to buy miners for a long time. We skipped out on the XPs, and I think we might have just... I think we might have just caught the bottom here right before a nice Bitcoin bull run.
Yeah, I'd say, okay, the first thing that caught my attention there is the XP. Why did you guys skip on the XPs?
You know, for us, we had a lot of existing facilities. And if we wanted to buy XPs, we basically had to take an M30 off the rack. So you're talking about pulling off 100 terahash miner to put on 140 terahash miner. And the XP price was pretty expensive. $24 a terahash. So it was a very, very long payback period. And then for the marginal cost for us to grow our hash rate, it was it was like $65-$70 a terahash. So it's not something that made sense for us. The T21s, though, fraction of the price, significantly more power, significantly, you know, more throughput per unit. So it starts to make a lot more sense on a marginal basis and a direct basis.
Well, congrats.
Yeah. So, I mean, just from personal experience, I've received amounts of, you know, a few hundred rigs at a time, but 64,000, this is a massive number. Just talk us through like the operations side of receiving them, deploying them, hooking them up. Is this an all hands on deck thing? Do you have the electricians and the service guys there? Like, what does this look like?
Oh, absolutely. This is a massive logistical undertaking, but you know, we've got one of the best operations teams in the business, and we have our own electrical engineering company that we use to do all of our own upgrades and all of our connective work and maintenance work. So, you know, we've got a very good team to put this together. Effectively, what we're looking at is almost 12,000 miners a month for 3 months straight. So you break that down on, you know, roughly a per weekly basis, you're looking at somewhere around 3,000 rigs every week, you know, assuming that it's just going to come kind of consistently throughout the month. And that means that our guys are basically going to go around site by site in Quebec. We're going to take guys out of, we've got 8 different sites over there. We're going to take guys out of all of our sites. We're going to flood them into one site to do the upgrades. And we're just going to go site by site as the miners come in. We do have to do some PDU upgrades. So we're doing that starting in January and February. And that'll be all ready by the time the miners come.
So I want to piggy off that one. Charlie asked about the operational logistics prep, but you know, this is a major deal. We know how capital intensive mining is and purchasing ASICs. What kind of prep do you have to do from a financing side to undertake this size of a deal?
Yeah, very good question. You know, I mean, first off, we've been building and getting ready for this deal for the better part of a year, maybe a little bit longer, because we've been holding off buying other equipment and buying other miners. So we've been working to build up our balance sheet in anticipation of a moment like this. So that is, you know, for us, that was the first step. We need to reduce our debt significantly, which we have. We're down well under $10 million of debt outstanding that we paid off by the end of the halving. That was all planned. And then we have built up quite a bit of cash and Bitcoin on the balance sheet throughout the year just by being disciplined and not being very aggressive on growth. You know, in addition to that, we have to line up some other sources of financing. So we just did that private placement last week. Between the private placement and what we've done throughout the rest of the year, we basically have sufficient liquidity to fund the first part of this order, the first 36,000 miners. And then in order to have better capital planning around the second part, what we did was we did something really new for us, and I think new for Bitmain. We took an option on 28,000 miners. So effectively what that allowed us to do was lock in that price, which, you know, it's the lowest price we've seen in a very, very long time. We locked it in throughout the entirety of 2024. And what that means is that with just a 10% deposit, which we can pay towards the final purchase price, we're actually able to postpone 90% of the capital obligations, right? Mm-hmm. And so we get a lot of flexibility in that. And we've planned the entire purchase around this. So we've got miners that are coming in advance for halving, which kind of get us in our halving ready position, but also match, you know, our liquidity and our cash position and what we, you know, our target budgets that we're trying to spend and our cash flow forecast for the coming year. And then for that extra portion of growth, you know, we've secured that with an option, and we'll have to figure out the rest of that financing for that second option next year. But it effectively allows us to have significantly better planning, lower costs, lower liabilities, and maintaining all of that flexibility in our planning and de-risking the growth. So, and that's something that we had to think about really carefully. 64,000 miners, if we exercise the full option, is about $174 million. So we split up that purchase into two chunks, which were more digestible and easier for us to manage. And then should also result in a better deployment plan and a more efficient deployment of capital.
I got to ask the question. You guys are aping in early on a new unit. Does that like scare you at all? Are you like worried about things happening with this? I've even heard like a lot of people are having a hard time getting their hands on this unit to test it out.
So I'm pretty excited about the T21 in particular. We've got our first miner coming in here in a couple of days. We should expect to have it in about 10, 12 days. So we don't have our first miner yet, but these T21s have a feature that we've been waiting for a long time. And that's this three-phase 415 volt power supply unit. For years, we've been wondering about and looking at, should we be engineering our own power supply units so we can get better functionality at our equipment, so that we can reduce the step downs in our facility, so we can improve the electrical distribution efficiency. And then finally, Bitmain came out with one. And so we're really, really excited about this T21 miner and what it can do. They've never made a miner that's this powerful and capable of operating in such a wide, you know, operating range. And I think that's where Bitcoin mining is going. You've got to be really flexible with your hash rate and your efficiencies and your cost inputs, since you're constantly optimizing. And this is the first miner released around that specific functionality from Bitmain.
You know, you mentioned, I was going to ask about
the first air-cooled one.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the three-phase. That has pretty big implications for just the stack of infrastructure leading up to the miner. Could you talk about how that might change like your facilities or perhaps facility design going forwards? Do we start seeing a different approach to building these Bitcoin mines?
The three-phase 415 volt power distribution really is quite a bit of a game changer. You know, so previously what you'd do is you'd go down and you'd have like a 277 or a 270 single phase. I mean, this is something, the voltage is something that keeps going up and up and up. When I first started mining, everything was 110, and then it was 208, and then we were at 240, and then 277. You know, this is a natural evolution, because the higher the voltage, basically the higher efficiency that we get on a lot of the other distribution components. And it stresses out the actual, you know, transmission of that electricity within the component too, and it's at higher voltage, you can get away with it at, you know, lower with a lower cable. And so we're really, really excited about what that does. That saves us a whole step of transformation in our facilities, and should actually really reduce our costs, both in terms of building out the site but also maintaining the site. And there should be some gains in the operational efficiency as well, just by not going through that extra layer of step down.
Ben, you mentioned back when you first started mining, and it brought back to me that, you know, we're speaking to an industry vet here. Curious, what has really changed for you? Now you're, you know, in a high seat at a publicly listed large scale operating company. What is the biggest thing you've kind of learned? How's your decision making process has kind of changed from where you started out to now, you know, being in the role that you're in?
You know, the funny thing is the math is all still the same. You know, the basic math of what we're doing is all the same. It's the scale of what we're accomplishing here, which is very different. Like when I started mining, you know, I was spending a lot of time on individual machines and on individual customers, because I had a lot of hosting clients when I first started out. You know, the scale that we're operating now, buying 64,000 T21 miners to be deployed in a single year. I couldn't have imagined that kind of scale when I first got started in 2015. You know, I would have thought that if I got to anywhere even close to a fraction of that size, you know, I'd be set for life, sort of a position. So the scale, I think, is really, really fundamentally different. The second thing I think is like the sophistication here on the capital side. You know, when I started getting involved in 2015, you know, this was all private money. It was all family and friend money, or people taking their stakes out. Now we've got 30 odd publicly traded companies. We've got ETFs on the way. We've got investment banks. We've got sovereign wealth funds. Like the sophistication of the money in this industry here has really reached a whole another level. And I think that's really what we need for Bitcoin to go to, you know, the all-time highs that we're all kind of waiting for. We need that institutional level adoption. We need JP Morgan paying attention. We need Goldman Sachs paying attention. Like, none of those guys were paying attention when I started, and they're all in now.
It's crazy.
And we have dedicated podcasts just for this part of the industry. So who would have ever thought that was going to happen? It's probably biggest thing for adoption.
Yeah, move over, Goldman. Mining pod is here.
The mining pod is here. Okay, well, we have some breaking news while we're on the show, and that is Ocean Pool has broken its silence over its inscription roadmap, if you will. So let's jump back into that topic. Ben, if you're game, you know, just stick around. We'll just do an extended phone call with you, get your live thoughts on these other topics. Let's do it. Okay.
That's what I called in for.
Perfect. Ocean Protocol launched earlier this week, as most people probably know who are listening to this podcast, big splash. The controversy that came out after that was, are they going to allow inscriptions or not into their mining pool? Now, they are planning on moving to Stratum V2, which allows for miners to build the block template themselves. And ostensibly, like, you could add or not create inscriptions within these blocks as you build them on a miner by miner basis. But people have been wondering, like, from the get-go, is Ocean Pool going to block or censor out these inscriptions? I was at the event. I actually walked up to Luke Dasher and asked him directly, like, do you plan on doing that? Do you plan on censoring these transactions? He said no. He said that miners should be the ones doing it and not the pool level. But we just got this tweet as of recording right now, 2:15, that after Ocean Pool mined its first block today, that they were not able to successfully censor transactions they consider spam, which I would take as being inscriptions. So they said, quote, the block template was created using the old V23 Bitcoin knots rather than the latest version, which is still completing testing. This unfortunately resulted in a large amount of spam being mined rather than real transactions. And they go on to say that they're committed to transparency and better Bitcoin. Charlie, let's throw it over to you. You are the biggest inscription fan I know. Also work at another mining pool, so we'll add that in there. What is your thought on Ocean Pool and inscriptions?
Yeah, well, as I was trying to say before somebody called in and cut me off, yeah, I mean, Stratum V2 is super cool. I like to see serious money and firepower behind a serious Stratum V2 pool launch. I think it's got some really smart people. Luke is a genius, and he's a genius and respected in Bitcoin for a reason. But also, like, this is, it's just, there's some goofy things with this. Like, the plan or roadmap to, or disrespect or not include inscriptions is in the pipeline, supposedly. That will happen down the road. I do think it is very strange that there's all of this announcement around the Ocean Pool, and it is discovered later that it's running off Luke's personal fork of Bitcoin Core, Bitcoin Knots, which is very strange that that was, like, not part of the messaging. I almost wonder if everybody knew that that was the case. And there's, like, Luke, can you handle the actual block production? Go do it. I don't know. I will see. I'm one of the kind of weird outsiders who is in favor of client diversity in Bitcoin. So I actually kind of like the idea that we've got a Bitcoin Knots pool. But at the same time, there's a lot of confusing decision making, and it doesn't really jive with, I think, good business practices. So we'll have to see how this shakes out. Congratulations on Ocean Pool hitting the first block. That's a really big one, especially this early. Like, I mean, statistically, it would take them, I think, at this hash rate, a few weeks sometimes, and they hit it within a few days. So that was certainly a nice feather in their cap. I just think that, you know, you give miners the ability to build their own blocks, and some will try to not include inscriptions, but eventually the checks have to be written, and the checks are much easier written when you have cash in the bank. And right now, Ordinals inscriptions put cash in the bank. So, you know, that's the reality of it.
Ben, are you going to be censoring? Are you going to take out our dick butts from on-chain?
Maybe he's going through some a tunnel.
I think we might have lost our caller, or he just doesn't want to answer the question. Some silence from the censorer. Okay, I'd say
I'll pop in until Ben comes back. I have no bone in the Ordinals fight, right? But as a pool, right, all the bargaining power is on the side of the miners. The miners own the machines. They direct their hash rate to where it wants to go. You want to have the most marketable, attractive, competitive pool as possible. And to me, it doesn't like matter what, you know, if you want to take a Bitcoin political stance, you may, but the best way to attract miners is to give them the most money. So why not process the transactions that have the highest fees per the size that the transaction will take in a block? Like, that's what makes the most sense to me. The pool space has been widely distributed since the start of pooled mining has begun. And a lot of pools have risen dramatically in how much hash rate has been directed to them, and then precipitously falled after and gone away. And Luke is no stranger to that. His Allegis pool, let me consult my notes here for a second. It started in 2011. It went until about 2016. They mined over 11,000 blocks, and at one point was about 20% of block production in a period in 2014, right? He's now starting a new pool because that pool is no longer around and operating. So it's no small feat to attract miners to your pool. And I would think the best approach would be, again, as miners are mercenaries trying to make the most money profitable, make it worth their while, and include transactions that are the most economical.
I think we got Ben back. He rang back in. Ben, any thoughts on censoring transactions? Will Bitfarms be participating in the censorship?
So I'm a profit maximalist, and that means that we can't do any censorship just because we're greedy. I don't believe that it's our right. And you know, honestly, the way that we run our business, it's not even possible for us to censor transactions because we work with Foundry Pool. Like, we don't choose our own block template. You know, we just let everything go. We won't be censoring anything. And I would want every single transaction fee to be included in my block rewards. Otherwise, you know, I'm not making the most I can with my compute, and I'm liable to move somewhere else. I think pools are a very, very tough business.
The shareholders of Bitfarms got to be just happy with that answer right there. So that's good stuff. I want to add one more note to this discussion. So there were some other filtering topics pertaining to Ocean Pool this week, kind of fluttering around Twitter. So the first part was what we just mentioned here, like, are they going to eventually block out quote unquote spam, which they see as inscriptions as spam. But because they're also using Bitcoin knots, it's been noted by 0xb10c, a Bitcoin developer who runs a great account, go follow him on Twitter, that certain transactions under 40 bytes or over 40 bytes, I should say, are also being filtered out by Ocean Protocol. And that's because they are using the Bitcoin knots version instead of Bitcoin Core itself. And so you're not able to include some op returns within Ocean Pool blocks because of this. We're already seeing some things related to Atomical Protocol being filtered out because of that. Charlie, I want to throw one over to you because that's like a really, really deep tech question.
I did not expect to be talking about Atomicals. It's my job to see everything that's going on in or adjacent or orthogonal to Ordinals, and Atomicals is one of those things. It looks a little bit like that goofy BRC20 fungible token protocol, but it adds, actually, get this, like a proof of work compute component to generating hashes or hashes with certain prefixes. It's actually a little bit interesting if you like proof of work and you just like think BRC20 is dumb. So it combines these two. It's very popular in Asia, but it's funny because that actually, I believe a lot of those generate, they take advantage of the full Bitcoin Core standard just rule op return size, which is, I believe Matt confirmed, is about 80 bytes of useful bytes. And so yeah, Bitcoin knots would prune that, would not include those. So if that's true, That's kind of goofy to me. I think this whole story is kind of funny and hilarious. We noticed that they were including some, like, very curiously, not including some transactions, and it appears that those are that kind. I don't know Bitcoin knots well enough to have even saw this coming. So we will just have to see where this goes.
We only have a few minutes left, so let's jump through these last few topics together. We got the BitFarm section done. Ben's making moves, buying a lot of units, and he's paying for them by not censoring. It's included in everything in the blocks. Let's go to this ant pool discussion. So last week we saw a huge Bitcoin reward from ant pool. They got a 83 BTC transaction fee included in a block. Later that week, we saw someone on Twitter pop up and say, hey, that was me. I had this mix up or problem, or give it to Charlie a second to explain what happened, because I know he knows about this. But essentially, this person lost 83 BTC and wanted it back. Ant pool gave the money back later that week. We didn't think they were going to do that. Charlie, walk us through this. Really, this looked like one of the first instances of MEV on Bitcoin, or one of the largest instances of MEV on Bitcoin, depending on how you think about it.
Yeah, it's really hard to know for certain, given that this is kind of the dark forest of block production. We don't know who is out there doing what necessarily, but Antpool managed to win that block. You can employ, you know, interesting techniques to bend that in your favor. So Antpool got it, but then they're gonna supposedly offer to return it. But what's curious is the mechanism that is described in their way of having us return it to you is a little bit curious, because it might not actually solve or account for the reason that Bitcoin was lost in the first place, if it is lost, given that they want you to sign from the wallet that it came from. But if that wallet is compromised, then you may just be kind of running it back on the whole lost Bitcoin thing. Again, as I said, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, I think there's more to this than meets the eye. I don't think we have the full story. And I feel bad for whoever's Bitcoin that is, if they have lost control over it. I feel that.
So, first, it's like, how altruistic of Antpool, right, to try to give this back to the person. But what you're saying, Charlie, is that they may not be returning the Bitcoin to the correct party?
To keep it brief, they want you to sign a message from the same wallet that it was sent from, which, if that wallet itself was compromised exploited, then we all know how that story could play out.
Womp, womp.
And then also in the announcement, they called it gas fees, which
that triggered a few people on Twitter.
I woke up and a little bit. I've spent the past 10 months trying to convince DGens that it's network fees and not gas fees, but it's a losing battle.
You Ordinals people are always playing semantics games, you know? It's Bitcoin NFTs, man. Let's just call what it is.
Just wait for the halving talk that's going to come back around in about a couple months.
It's painful. It's painful.
Yeah.
Ben, what should have Ample done in this situation? If they're true profit maxis, should they have just kept the money?
Well, it sounds like they still might.
We might be booting Ben.
I feel it. I feel that.
I feel the pain of it. It's okay. I'll throw the question to Matt, and then actually we only have a few minutes left, so we'll wrap up after that. Matt, should they keep the transaction, or what do you think about this in terms of like the payout schemes we've seen for different miners? Like, what's a fair and equitable thing here if we cannot identify who actually sent this payment and if they meant to do it or not?
To me, it just requires more investigative work on the side of Antpool to understand whether, and really, like, it's up to them regardless, even if they would want to do this. They rightfully received this fee. They won the block. They included the transaction. It is altruistic of them to want to help someone that has seemingly lost their funds. But right now, it's unclear whether this wallet was basically stolen, and so the hacker has the private keys, and they could basically fake that the funds were theirs in the first place. So I mean, I don't feel strongly either way, I guess is my point. Well, I think the more interesting story about Antpool right now is their hash rate climbing, right? The amount of blocks that they're winning, less this network fee story.
Yeah, they just recently passed Foundry again. So Foundry and them have been kind of battling back and forth for their top spot. And them surpassing Foundry comes after they just imported a lot of S19 XPs. And just from talking with different miners in the US, a lot of those miners have been flowing into the US, those XPs, and they're now being deployed pretty actively. I think Bitmain made a lot of XPs and they were just like sitting on them for quite a while because the XP, you know, it was produced, it came out in November 2021. That was like the announcement date, but then it was basically sold into a market that was falling apart. And so I think they had to sit on them for quite a while. And now we're seeing that surge of hash rate come out. And we're seeing that a lot through Amp Pool and the surge of hash rate through that pool in particular, which we're seeing that reflected in network hash rate, right? We're around 500 exahash. Charlie, Matt, any thoughts as we close out here?
It's the eternal recurring cycle of pools get big, network has to figure out what to do. It's a constant trial of resiliency for Bitcoin. How big is too big? How profitable is too profitable? I think this is a mantra of mine the past couple months is we will see this play out in a number of ways over the next few months. I mean, years. Yeah. And months.
To me, I'm more curious of, I think, why the Antpool hash rate is growing relatively to other pools. And so I'm curious, I wonder you guys' thoughts, but I know our time's running out here. We know that manufacturers in the past have kind of self-mined, right, as they've been developing ASICs. We know Antpool kind of in recent history, I guess I say recent history, but it was probably a year or two ago at this point, spun off independently from Bitmain. I'm curious if they're making a lot of T21s right now and they're kind of self-mining and that's really been what's growing Antpool's hash rate. But I guess like to Charlie's point, as far as mining pool centralization goes, I think it's a fun topic of discussion that a lot of people have theorized about. People love talking about 51% attacks. Do I think that it will ever happen? No, in short. And we could do a whole episode on why that is. But yeah, I'll throw it back over to you, Will. Closing thoughts.
Yeah, we'll close out here. We lost Ben. He went through another tunnel, so we lost him. But that's some great thoughts from Ben. Thank you, Ben, for joining the show. Thank you, Matt and Charlie. If you enjoyed the show, give us a like on YouTube, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'll see you guys again next week. Matt, Charlie, thank you.